And we're back. Welcome once again to another episode of Mike, Mike, and Oscar. We are taking a step aside from the Oscars sprint right now and going back into the horror section because it is the final week of October. We are racing towards Halloween. So why not get your dancing shoes on and go to a German academy where they're basing a new remake, a updated version of this film. We are reviewing the Dario Argento Suspiria movie, the 1977 original. I am Mike One. This is also Mike.
Also Mike. And how about that music from Goblin? The rock band Goblin.
Big fan of prog rock now all of a sudden.
Oh my goodness gracious. 1977 Suspiria, though, had a unique impact on John Carpenter for 1978's Halloween. I loved how that was thrown all over these, you know, special features and YouTube videos that we watch going into this retrospective.
Which is wild because of how gross and how much blood there is in this movie compared to there just being, we kept talking about theater
the
of the mind.
The repetitive soundtrack and the dreamlike nature and a lot of things that Mr. Carpenter said he saw in the theater the year before that affected him.
There are pretty plainly some inspirations there, and we'll get into all of it. And we're going to start like we always do. This is a movie event pod, and why are we doing this? Well, because of obviously the 2018 version of Suspiria is scheduled to come out this week. But we probably won't get to it this week. We probably won't be available to us this week.
It's not available to us this week, so we're going to keep our fingers crossed for next week.
Yes.
Hopefully it does well in independent release, and so they push it out.
A little sooner. Oscar buzz about that, too. You keep seeing some things.
Everybody's saying, like, there's going to be mother type of reactions, and that is the Darren Aronofsky film, not, like, your mom or my mom. Or your...
What'd you say? Well, we love that movie. I mean, I love that movie,
but
certainly,
people are going to hate it, everybody keeps saying.
All right.
And all these critics just have these shit-eating grins on their faces that I can see through the tweets that are all words on the screen. I could see them. I could see your shit-eating grin saying that, oh, my God, you're going to hate it, but I love it.
I think there's a twist in this one, but if it is what it is, you were on it very early. You called that out from the get-go when we started first reviewing the trailers for Suspiria way back months ago. So
even a blind squirrel, but I think there's going to be like 19 twists.
Yeah, it seems to be that type of feel. And it is Luca Guadagnino who did Call Me By Your Name last year, which was a big hit on the screen and a big hit in MMO land for that Oscar sprint profile. So
we
see similar results here, and we're going to talk about the Dario Argento original that has been updated. So let's step back in time to 1977. Mike's going to start us off as he always does with cast and crew.
Co-written and directed by Dario Argento, the bird with the crystal plumage, the cat of nine tails, four flies on gray velvet, the 5 days, deep red, Suspiria, Tenebre, Phenomena, I almost pronounced that Italian-wise, Phenomena.
I'm really glad you have the cast and crew because it's just loaded with Italian names, and we saw how that doesn't go well with me.
Right. Opera, Trauma, Bolognese.
Bolognese.
The Stendhal Syndrome, The Phantom of the Opera, Sleepers, The Card Player, Mother of Tears, Giallo, which is pronounced like...
Jello from Bill Cosby?
Gelato.
Oh, all right.
Which I like. It's Italian ice cream.
Jello!
Close. Dracula 3D and the recently announced The Sandman. All of that makes up Dario Argento's filmography, Michael.
Yeah, he seems to be a busy guy.
Any favorites within that group? I really didn't see many. I see Deep Red, The Girl with the Crystal Plumage, and then and Suspiria here. I'm
not familiar with his work. I did buy one of those triple features on Blu-ray. I think it's Deep Red, Inferno, and maybe Phenomena. I'm not positive, but I got to get into it. I haven't sunk my teeth into it yet.
He's famous for creating this subgenre of films called giallo. Like I said, I wish it was the ice cream, but from a linguistic perspective, it's very pleasing to me nonetheless. Argento began his career as a film
his
critic.
His movies come in strawberry and pistachio.
It's bright red. I mean, it's like
that's a good point.
It's like the old Western, you know, we're going to talk about it. The old Western movie, especially the spaghetti Western.
Yes.
With that kind of red
emphasis
blood.
On spaghetti.
Yes, sir. Argento began his career as a film critic.
There's hope for us yet, Michael.
Yeah, and then broke through as a screenwriter. So that's pretty cool. He and Bernardo Bertolucci most notably collaborated on a screenplay for Sergio Leone's. There's the spaghetti Western. Sergio Leone's Once Upon a Time in the West.
Yeah, there you go.
So screenwriting jobs became directorial work. Before he knew it, giallo filmmaking was created. The subgenre was created, and he was busting off hits right off the beginning of his career. Bird with the Crystal Plumage. plumage starting out.
These guys just basically falling backwards into these genres that they've created and are still basically relevant to this day.
Yeah, elements of detective fiction, slasher horror, and psychological thriller. That's
yes.
what makes up the genre. And also crazy ding-ding music, yeah. whatever you want to call that.
Stained glass everywhere and backlighting.
Unfortunately, this since the 70s and 80s, most of the critical consensus has been labeling Argento's films on the decline, and that's also works hand in hand with the box office. So audience reception, box office, critical reception, they've all been on the decline a little bit. But he had a sweet spot where he was pushing out films that were hits on both seaboards, the European and the American, if I can make analogies.
Multiple ports,
and also hits with the critics.
Yeah, you have a pretty interesting parallel that actually rings fairly true here.
So yes, Argento and Carpenter, their careers really seem to mirror one another, right?
It seems that way, and like I said, these are two guys that kind of created these genres that are still relevant today, and they started very hot, and then there's some critical backlash, and now they're maybe at some point coming back into the fold soon. They're still around, they're still relevant, their works are still being done.
They're still getting greenlit.
Yeah, so there's some cachet left in those
Jamie
names.
Lee Curtis is still, you know, celebrating anniversaries.
Tilda Swinton is putting on makeup.
True. Suspiria stars Jessica Harper as Susie Banyan. She's the
Dakota Johnson
character yeah. coming up. So Harper, she's known for roles in Minority Report, Shock Treatment, and Phantom of the Paradise, which is a De Palma film, got her the role here.
Okay.
Stefania Cassini as Sarah.
Flavio
Bucci.
Flavio Bucci.
Is Daniel.
I've been taking lessons in the last 2 days.
Miguel Bose, that's not Italian, though. Miguel Bose is Mark.
Get out of here!
Barbara Magnolfi is Olga. Then us Americans can recognize these actors. Rudolph Schundler is Dr. Milius. Mm-hmm. He's from The Exorcist. We have Udo Claire is very recognizable from a host of films. Blade, Flesh for Frankenstein, Melancholia, Lars von Trier movie there. Downsizing recently. American Animals recently. Rob Zombie's Halloween recently.
Hey, we just covered that
so,
one.
A very recognizable face. They dubbed another American voice for his German accent.
Oh, this movie
which
was
is
dubbed?
Very upset. Yeah. Joan Bennett is Madame Blanc, and Bennett acted in TV series Dark Shadows, as well as Scarlet Street and The Woman in the Window. And then we have Alida Valli. She is known from Orson Welles' Third Man, Eugenia Grande, and Gregory Peck's film The Parodying Case. Valli is Miss Tanner in Suspiria. She had quite the career.
Talk about a veteran working with some epic filmmakers.
And they wanted to showcase like her in this movie. She got a bunch of scenes cut, I remember, but they were also really happy with her performance. She's intense
yes,
in that dance.
She's
a coach.
Very, very memorable in this movie. Sure.
Suspiria also stars Susanna Giavicoli. Ava Axen, Margarita
Horowitz.
Is this like
offensive what I'm doing here?
Jacopo Mariani, Fulvio Mingozzi, and Franca Scagnetti. I probably botched a bunch. I'm Wonder Bread.
You were closer
myself.
Than I would have been.
Suspiria was co-written by Daria Nicolodi, who's the mother of Asia Argento, who just got in trouble, unfortunately, but she's had a long career as an actress, daughter of Dario. So Dario and Daria were a major item
That's
for like 10 years.
There's a billion names out there.
Maybe he's a film director. He might be she's an actress. Maybe they're
yeah,
a little.
She was his muse, had a lot of work in his stuff.
It's like
so they
the couple, right? That they look like they could be brother
and
sister.
Yeah, they're turning into each other slowly
they're
over time.
They're turning into each other. They look like maybe there's a little, what's the word, narcissism there?
Yes. We're very familiar with that word.
I have no idea. They look nothing alike, these two, but I don't know, maybe. Nickelodeon, the big egos in the filmmaking
sure.
business.
Yes,
that's a true fact.
Tend to be, yes.
Nickelodeon is known for her roles in Deep Red, Phenomena, and Property is No Longer a Theft. She wrote early on in her career. She acted throughout her career, and she acted for Argento. Story inception and production notes here. Argento partially based Suspiria on the essays of Thomas De Quincey, who, after some research, I gather was like the Hunter S. Thompson of the early 1800s, Michael.
Just doing all the peyote.
He wrote, predominantly addicted to opium.
They are.
and didn't hide that fact.
Why bother?
One of his collection of essays was like the essays of an opium addict or something. I forget what it was called. I'm not going to look it up now. Yeah, stop. No. Stop any of our momentum here.
This is just a coloring book.
Argento says he wrote the story while fascinated with his travels that culminated in a trip. So we're Americans, we don't know Europe, but apparently there's a magic triangle, and Argento was frequenting the countries of France, Germany, and Switzerland, where they meet. And when he was visiting them, he found that a lot of the culture there was like obsessed, 1977, 76, 75, with the occult.
We've hit on this a couple times throughout different properties we've reviewed too, that the Satanism, the occult, before terrorism was like the main fear of sweeping the country. It was like that 1980s. It was all about witches, demons, the occult, Satanism, the praising of the devil, all that stuff. So it was a big deal.
There was also a very strong, you know, sense of religion. I mean, religion is a major facet of the communities there. So he had this trilogy of films that he did early on in his career as he's traveling through Europe and writing his stuff called The Three Mothers. And there's three fates here, Michael, regarding these three mothers. There's the Mother of Tears, Graces, and Sorrows. Did I read that right? I don't know. There's something with those vocabulary words, religious vocabulary words, involved in De Quincey's essays. And his first three films, or one of those three films, were based on this sense of three mothers in these essays.
It's wild, but it also shows you how special filmmaking is, that you can go down this type of rabbit hole and this obsession with this pretty, I didn't know, can't call him obscure writer, but you get into his works and then turn them into your own visions.
Yeah, that was Dario's obsession. Daria's obsession, Nicolodi here, she based her screenplays, or her infusion was with a lot of fairy tales. Bluebeard, Pinocchio, Alice in Wonderland, that's the infusion that she really focused on. So this was kind of cool to research all this. Because
there are some fantastical elements to this movie, without question.
Yeah, and Nicolodi also kind of woven in a story that her grandmother told her about piano lessons she received as a child, where she thought, the grandmother thought, she encountered black magic. So she had a witch.
As you do.
Yeah, in the magic triangle there. So these characters, this was fascinating to me.
Yeah.
The gall of the writers of this script, Dario and Daria, originally wanted to make the characters of this story in the ballet school 12 years old.
Huh.
They realized it wasn't going to work.
That doesn't seem like a good idea.
You can't murder a 12-year-old girl brutally on screen.
I was going to say, this
screen.
Barely has an exchange rate as it is to coming over to America in the 70s. You're going to do it with kids. That kind of changes the tenor of everything, I think.
Yeah, that would not have worked. But they definitely wanted to cast Jessica Harper as like a Snow White character.
I know you have your issues with her, but she plays bewildered and exhausted I thought.
Yeah, I'm coming around to her a little bit. Not as bad as I don't know. I still don't love her performance here. But turned down the A role in Annie Hall.
Wow.
To do this movie instead.
Must be nice to have options, huh? I don't want to work with Woody Allen. I'll work with Dario Argento instead.
Right. However, she may have picked the wrong one, because that one won the Oscar.
Right. Yes.
And she didn't really get a huge career after this.
No.
She was doing schlock horror movies for the next 20 years. I mean, she had one that's like an all-timer cult classic. Much of the film was shot in Rome at Di Paoli Studios. I screwed that one up. The rest of it was shot in the city of Munich. Anthropomorphic lenses were used. Production design and cinematography emphasize primary colors, particularly red. That was a point that Argento wanted.
Yes, they do. I can confirm that.
The color, spelled O-U-R, of Disney's Snow White was a major influence on Argento and cartoons. He loved watching cartoons.
Man, if you go back and rewatch Disney's Snow White, it gets fucking creepy. Like, I can absolutely see. I've said on this how
fairy tales are creepy.
The ride scared the shit out of me as a kid, and that's definitely why.
Fairy tale stories creep the hell out of you. You take them on face value, and you take away all the singing animals.
Oh, man, yeah, total. Like, the Disneyification of these old fairy tales makes them all sweet and romance.
Right.
But that is not the origin of these stories.
If you had a couple edgy English teachers in your day, or if you listened to Guillermo del Toro speak ever, that is definitely, and obviously Dario Nicolodi is picking up on that fact. A fairy tale is a hard-ass story.
Sure.
It's a serious story with serious stakes when it's told on its face there. So that's what happened here, and this is what you get.
This is not a fairy tale.
No, well, it's like a hardcore fairy tale. It's
like the worst fairy tale ever.
The worst one. So the Italian prog rock band called Goblin composed most of the film's score in collaboration with Argento himself. And I just, listen, if this was done in the 90s instead of more whatever else, I would just see Argento as Christopher Walken just saying, more cowbell. More cowbell.
Was guar not available to get in there? But again, another similarity. Argento, musically inclined, doing the score for this movie. John Carpenter, musically inclined, doing the score for Halloween. Yeah, like he's brought up already. It's kind of weird how these two came out at the same time and have such similar paths.
Absolutely.
We'll talk about specs for Suspiria, written and directed by Dario Argento. Dario Nicolodi, I'm going to try really hard not to say Nickelodeon, was given the screenwriting credit on the IMDb page. Again, Argento's girlfriend / wife / muse / whatever, appearing in multiple Argento properties, such as Phenomena, Deep Red Inferno, and others. This film had its debut February 1st, 1977, and it has a 98-minute runtime, produced by Seda Spettacoli and distributed by Produzioni Atlas Consorziate.
Well, I don't know about the last one. But Produzioni was a good pronunciation. I
tried.
I think.
All right, I was close.
You're one for two.
Infamous music and score of the film, as also Mike told you, handled by Argento himself, as well as Italian prog rock band Goblin, who are still around today. The cinematography.
No way.
That's where the Wikipedia page exists. That's all I can comment
are
on.
Are they still just peddling this soundtrack?
Well, when something works, yeah, why not? The cinematography was done by Luciano Tovoli, who in America is known as the cinematographer for Murder by Numbers and Single White Female. Only box office numbers I found, as box office mojo only goes back to the early 1980s. The ones listed on Wikipedia were the only ones I could find and dig up, which claimed that the film only made about $1.2 million stateside, and that was all through video rentals. Blockbuster had its heyday, I guess, with this horror buffs trying to make their way.
Yeah, I couldn't find a lot either. However, every special featurette you watch, wherever, says the movie did well.
All right, good to know. I can imagine why. It's very vivid and very in your face, and there is a lot to talk about.
Yeah, those Blu-ray special features are all over the fact that it did great in cities.
Right. Well, that makes a lot of sense, especially cities with tall churches. 7.5 IMDb score right now on 59,000 plus reviews. Certified Fresh 92% Rotten Tomato rating on 50 reviews, 46 of them being positive from critics. The average critical score is an 8.4 out of 10, my lord. Audience score sits at 83% on 35,000 reviews. Average audience score is 3.9 out of 5, so general audience is not taking as high a liking to it as critics seem to be. Mm-hmm. Only had 10 critical reviews to substantiate its 79 Metacritic score, but again, it's a 79 Metacritic score, so that's fairly high.
I wonder if, again, all the critics are not seeing this movie, because this is not a movie for everybody. This is niche taste.
This is as niche as niche gets.
And kind of like Mandy getting 90%. Like, if all the critics watch Mandy, it would not be at 90%. You know?
Yeah. There's probably something to that, and this is, I still think it's worth studying.
I'm just like the poo-poo guy in this episode.
Well, you're not wrong, because it is, you could easily see how not everyone would be drawn to it, but it's worth studying it just from a foreign filmmaking standpoint, how things were being done differently across the ocean than they were in Hollywood in 1977.
Start of a genre. Yeah. It's kind of like Pulp Fiction took the pulp comics, this took the giallo comics, and turned it into its own genre.
It's its own thing. Talk about some awards that this film has been nominated for and won. In 1978, it was nominated for a Saturn Award for Best Supporting Actress for Joan Bennett. Interesting that Jessica Harper didn't get that nom. They went supporting there. 2002, it was nominated for a Saturn Award for Best DVD Classic Film Release. And in 2018, it won the Rondo Halton Classic Horror Award in the following categories: Best DVD or Blu-ray, Best Restoration, Best DVD Commentary, David Del Valle and Derek Bolthello, and Best DVD Extra, A Sigh from the Depths, 40 Years of Suspiria, directed by Daniel Griffith. What I want to concentrate on, and what we will concentrate on throughout this, I imagine, is Best Restoration. You said there was a sharp difference between the Blu-ray restoration and what you saw otherwise.
Maybe it was just the audio wasn't balanced. The audio was so loud on the DVD Then I watched the Blu-ray, and it just seemed like it was much lighter. It was all balanced. Like, the dubbing was so loud. I had to turn it all the way up to hear what their dialogue, and I had to turn it all the way down because the music, the score was so loud.
The distortion was that bad, huh?
It was so bad.
Huh.
And I'll get into
what about the colors? I mean, there were.
Well, it looks great, okay. You know, still. But the audio problems with the DVD that I watched and rewatching this Blu-ray, yes, you were right. Because I was like, Mike, I don't want to shit all over this movie. I'm going to just bend over and take a poop on this movie. Right. I can't do that.
No.
Everybody loves this movie. Yeah. I liked this movie the first time I seen it. What the hell happened? It's like 10 years since I seen this movie. Yeah, and watching this audio quality was just like ridiculous.
It was
short film.
I did keep trying to prod you. I was like, the Blu-ray is good, and the Blu-ray they did do a fantastic job. I can't relate to the audio because I don't know, but I can speak just to the colors on this Blu-ray are striking.
Right, and people who walked into the room watching me watch this movie, like, this must be the worst movie ever, right? Because they're like, they're seeing the same audio that I was. They're hearing the same audio. Yeah. So, all right. Well, you got the plot premise here.
Here
Mike?
It is. Reads off IMDb as such, quote, an American newcomer to a prestigious German ballet academy comes to realize that the school is a front for something sinister amid a series of grisly murders. Actually, pretty accurate for what this batshit crazy plot has in store. That's a pretty accurate premise if you're going to boil it down to a sentence.
I guess so. It's not a complicated premise. It's not a complicated movie on its face. However, you know, if you think about all the metaphors of it, I still don't get those.
It's an LSD trip, but if you stay in your house instead of going to a music festival.
It could be about 101 different things. We don't really know. I mean, I don't know if you really dove in and cracked the nut of what this is.
I took it all at face value.
All right. So my expectations were like, I'm going to see a stylistic achievement. And then I told you about the audio stuff. I had dual watches where I enjoyed it much more on the second watch. And I'll come in much more favorably. I have problems with this movie. I'm not going to come out and
there are problems.
I'm not going to gush over it.
Just like there's problems in 78's Halloween. They exist.
But I'm excited to see Luca Guadagnino, who's made a couple really strong movies in a row that I've really liked. I'm excited to see him take this hour and 38-minute movie and do his worst with 2.5 hours,
Yeah, and that's the thing that kind of gets lost in the sauce here, that we're getting an extra hour and what seems like probably an extra main character, if you go by what Tilda Swinton has been doing in that.
I think if you're going to flush out the story, you kind of need that, because there's a lot of melodrama. There's a lot of things not explained
in
this plot line that we're going to quibble with. And it's nice if you give, reason and causality to those storylines.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Actual story. As far as expectations, I knew, Suspiria is a cult classic, and I'm a big horror fan. I had never seen it, actually, prior to purchasing the Blu-ray and watching it for myself. I was expecting a cult classic. I was not expecting it to be as graphic and over the top as it was.
So it actually was horrifying for you as a horror movie.
Especially the beginning. My lord. Yeah. That beginning, what happens with that Patty character. We'll get into it.
I'm also on the fence now, where I was like, watching this the first time, or rewatching it the first time, it bothered me. And it just wasn't audio issues. It just bothered me. It got under my skin. I didn't have a pleasant time.
Was it like a repulsion type thing? Because it was too gory?
And that's where I think. Like, it's not just repulsion from the gore. It's repulsion from the trying to get a cab in the rain. And that scene is like one of the most irksome scenes of the entire movie. The entire year of movie watching for me. That scene freaked me the hell out. And I think now that when I rewatch it, I'm like, that's actually really, really creepy and really good.
It's creepy. Yes.
Yeah. But it creeped me out so much on the first watch that I'm like, just, I don't like it. Get away, it's yucky. That's where I was.
Yeah, I can't blame you for that. And again, we're going to dive deeper into all that. Production values, we've pretty much hit on them.
The score is merciless.
It's like a character.
There's also audio problems. Like, there's audio gaffes in this, both cuts, the Blu-ray cut.
The Blu-ray
too.
Cut as well.
I don't understand when he goes silence from no score to, you gotta transition better.
Trying to find a meaning in that, and I couldn't, because man, that's a fault of mine. If you find one, let me know what I'm missing. But in that very opening scene with Jessica Harper's character, she's walking in the German airport, and the POV keeps cutting from her first person to us watching her walk, and we only get the theme that when it's in her first person POV. But then the music continues when she actually leaves the airport, and right. It's a third-person POV. I just couldn't understand it.
I don't understand it either, because you wonder if some of the sounds in the soundtrack are supposed to be around the characters. I forget the vocabulary word. Don't hate on me. AP,
mise-en-scene.
AP snobs out there. Some of the music has like witch in there.
Yes. It
has like laughing and cackling, and obviously has the drums. So some of that's in the character's head, or some of that's
right.
supposed to be, you know,
a hint
just
to the audience.
Or, yeah. But some of it might actually be, because you got lightning and crackling. Mm-hmm. Some of that might be in the scene. And then when you go from everything to nothing and just silence, because it's dubbed and you don't have any sound mixed or sound edited, whatever, it's just completely silent, that doesn't work.
Right. It does not. It is odd. I wonder if there was just a conscious effort made to just make this as unnerving audibly as possible.
This music does that, though.
Yeah, it does.
Goblin accomplishes that fact. And like I said, in the Blu-ray, when it's all balanced, it's kind of freaky, and it really works. And,
oh, yeah.
It's, and it's pleasant. Like, when it's not blaring in my eardrums, it's more like just creepy pleasant, and I can like it as like a kid at Hot Topic instead of... You know,
love
just,
Hot Topic.
Well, yeah, you can just enjoy it for
right.
being weird.
Right.
You know,
as
opposed to just being unpleasant to your eardrums.
Go on to the second half of production values. So you're talking about the visuals, and this is pretty much the bread and butter of this movie.
Yeah, this is the why you go see this, why you rent this movie. I mean, gorgeous to look at. All the color schemes, like we've been saying, the primary colors, it's weird, it's unique.
Unique is a very appropriate word.
I mean, seriously, do we see color schemes for movies like this today? I mean, other than Gaspar Noé, maybe? I mean, it's...
Sure, and it's also not... I mean, it's not even being copied today, right? We talk about the Suspiria 2018 right. trailer, how it's more rustic feel and more like autumnal colors and stuff like that. And this is so vivid and bright and in your face and onto, you can't help but stare at it.
I wonder if the production design had an unintentional effect on Persian/Guido/crazy rich Asian living rooms, though, Michael, for the next 50 years. That was a long
possible.
Setup for
yes,
that joke.
Possible. I see where you're going with that. We're going to get in, obviously, in spoilers, we'll talk about some of our favorite visually striking scenes, because they are wrapped up for the most part within the plot.
A lot of wow moments,
yeah.
though. I mean, we're going to gush over those. And really, every scene in this movie, you take it for granted at a certain point. It looks so good. So production design and
that's why that's another reason I go back to. I can't imagine this wasn't at least studied back in the 70s to see what the differences were between international filmmaking and American filmmaking at the time, because there's no American film that touches this visually mm-hmm. for 78 anyway, or 77. We'll move into performances. This is another thing we're probably gonna have to hide the ball somewhat, but you had an issue with the lead.
I don't like the lead actress, unfortunately. I call him like I see him. Who am I to criticize? But still, I can't help myself. Jessica Harper gives a puke in my mouth performance, bad
Woo!
Performance, because I don't buy the fact that she is pretending to be ill or fainting to be ill. I'm just like, I want to scream at the scene, faker, you're faking.
So you heard it here
tell.
First. Also, Mike wants Jessica Harper to get out of the business.
I was in a rage. I was very upset that I didn't buy the fact.
Let me play
was...
devil's advocate there, though, because yeah. the scene where she gets into the cab finally, and I agree, her getting the cab, she does some snobbish things, but the scene where she's actually in the cab and she just, you are not going to be disconcerned or are concerned if it's not for her eyes darting around and just playing the facial expressions.
I like, she plays some things well, but like if you saw a woman running through the woods,
yes.
you would make a different face than just what she does.
What's
like,
happening, yeah.
yeah. Like, I get it. It's a dream state. I get it. But you got to base it a little bit in reality, a little bit. Even dream, like, she's like a drugged face. And I guess it works if this is all David Lynchian nightmare or something.
How dare you bring up his name?
Right.
No,
you're right.
I get it.
I guess she's playing this like she's in a dream and her and she's gotten Botox injections into her face.
Jeez. All right.
I don't like it.
Not a fan of Jessica Harper. What about some of the other performances we had here?
Also, she's the worst athlete in the world, by the way. And I'm going to be very upset with this. She's supposed to be a ballet dancer, and those mm-hmm. girls can do backflips through a room. They're phenomenal athletes. She can't even walk without falling.
Well, wait a minute. In her dance scene, she's ill.
That's fine. I'm saying when something, well, I'm gonna have to do it in spoilers.
All right, all right,
because
we'll get
things come at her and she has no maneuverability. She's okay. An god awful athlete.
Not light on her feet is what you're saying. That's your scouting report for
That's
Jessica
my
Harper.
Scouting all report. Right. Those two issues of the character, fine. But yeah, I guess if Dario Argento told her, let me know. I'll play devil's advocate for myself.
Okay.
If she told her that you're in a dream and you can't overreact to anything, or you can't react accurately to anything, because this is a dream, you have to pretend like you're dream reacting. Oh my God, I'm naked. Oh my God, this woman's running through the woods. If you're going to act like that.
So you're saying if it was a choice, you're for it.
If that makes sense.
Okay.
I still don't like it. Again, it's unpleasant to view bad acting.
Fair enough.
But
fair
if
enough.
She's purposely bad acting, then I get it.
What about the Madame Blanc, the Miss Tanner characters, any of the administration there? I like them both. I thought Joan Bennett especially was, I was just waiting for her to be a bitch.
Yeah, I mean, the ballet Nazi coach is intense, but she pulls it off. I thought she did a nice job. Again, I think if, when you're playing sick, if any, like these, the girls in here aren't great.
It also wasn't helped by the dubbing.
The dubbing doesn't help. Yeah. It doesn't match up with the voices.
And this whole movie was dubbed, clearly.
Yeah, but if you, bottom line, my thesis statement, if you're going to be sick, Meryl Streep has played sick before, right?
Did
and
you
she's
just
convinced. Viola Davis blowing real-life boogers out of her nose sick
okay. So,
before,
so
crying.
In summation, be Meryl Streep. Is what you're saying.
Yeah.
That's, right.
I have a high bar.
I'm a reasonable criticism.
I'm an Oscar critic. We do an Oscar podcast. This is a retrospective for Halloween. I'm going to have a high bar. Sorry.
All right. What about script thoughts overall and what we saw played out?
The murders are each like set pieces in their own right, Michael. They're gross, but they work extraordinarily well, I thought.
Gorgeous. Yeah. I mean, they really are. Pretty to see.
Beautiful murder?
Yeah. I know. I'm a bad person. I understand
that.
But I thought they were visually striking.
Visually striking for sure. The story is simple but a bit weird, like I said. I think it works well for a horror film. Like we forgive some of the melodrama. Like I mentioned it before. It's there. There are things not explained, but we forgive it because it's supposed to be a horror movie.
And it takes a chance, right? Because it is a horror movie, it takes a wild chance that the big reveal is something that's not going to be in every movie. So
you have a fairy tale here. There's supernatural
right.
elements. So you don't necessarily, again, I tried to play devil's advocate on myself upon all these rewatches. You don't have to explain everything because you have supernatural elements involved. So WTF is happening. That's part of the fun as an audience member. Leave some mystery in there for the audiences as well. That kind of works. They leave some story threads, though, unforgivably, you know, without an ending. Like there's a potential character and then he doesn't get a follow-up.
I would say not only threads, but the main storyline, too. It just, like, from the line from It's Always Sunny in Philly. And then the movie just sort of ends. Like, it just ends. It just,
right.
Yeah, we kind of have a quick
fifth
conclusion.
Sense.
Yeah.
Is that from that episode?
It's from the one with the Dolph Lundgren episode.
The Dolph Lundgren.
Penetration. Back to the lab. Yeah. Penetration.
Yeah, my God. Dennis is a bad director.
Yes.
Lars von Trier of
that world, yeah.
Of that
He's
world.
Very inspired. Talk about the Oscar lens and what it was like back in 77 as we come to the end of the non-spoiler portion of this. And the non-spoiler portion is probably going to be the longer one because, the plot is relatively simple. But this one, 77, Oscar lens, more visually stunning, probably not
right.
going to be considered best picture in those days.
Star Wars. It was the year of Star Wars.
So oops!
Star Wars is going to win all the technical categories.
Of course.
It did. And guess what? It was also the year of Close Encounters of the Third Kind. So if Star Wars didn't win it, Close Encounters of the Third Kind
what
won
a year.
It. Yeah, so Best Art Direction, Star Wars. Other nominees were Airport 77, I Never Seen.
I have to
Couldn't
say that,
have been
no.
better than this, though. So this seems like it's got to be better than some of these nominees. I haven't seen them all, but Close Encounters of the Third Kind, that's deserving. Spy Who Loved Me, Bond film, probably deserving. We've seen big production values. At least they look really fun. The Turning Point, I don't know that from
it was
any.
A movie that came out. So,
yeah. It was a movie that came out.
Yeah, I mean, it was a big year for cinema. And again, we have that whole, like you said earlier, the new one's being treated, it's getting that mother-type buzz. Imagine back in 77 when the internet wasn't a thing and this one just was kind of sprung on people.
Below the radar,
yeah.
Most people's radar. Cinematography, Close Encounters 1, Islands in the Stream,
that
Julia.
That is what we are. Sorry.
What's that from?
That's a song. Islands in, Islands in the Stream.
Oh, it's named after a song?
I don't know.
I didn't see a lot of these Fringe nominees. We weren't doing an Oscar podcast in 1977. So Julia, Looking for Mr. Goodbar, The Turning Point, also nominated here. I don't know if they're better than those four movies that I didn't see. I know it's not better than Close Encounters.
Or Star Wars. Yeah. And probably not better than the Bond one either. Maybe more visually stunning. That's where we'd land on it. But that's kind of the final thoughts here as well for the non-spoiler section. This is a visual masterpiece.
Watch this on Blu-ray. Yes. Don't watch it on DVD.
With the volume off, maybe.
And I guess if you embrace the nightmare, this is a nightmare motif.
Sure.
I mean, I guess that's a little bit of a spoiler, but it's the tone from Jump One. You know, this is kind of like a nightmare.
Yeah. If you can get your hands on the restoration, the restored format, definitely seek this one out. I would say that's probably where we'd land as far as watch, not don't watch for me.
Sure.
And if you're a horror fan, I mean, this is one of the classic pillars of the whole genre, and it created a genre in and of itself. It was an inspiration for the whole Halloween thing that we just finished covering. So it's an important deal for that genre.
It's a fun study, and even if you just listened to this before, you know, going to see Luca's Suspiria in a couple weeks,
remake,
then it's kind of cool. I don't know if it's worth watching before Luca's movie. That's the last thing I want to end off with, because here's the question. They have purposely taken this off VOD. It's off. You can't buy it on Amazon. You can't buy it on Google.
That's a good point.
That's why I had to find a weird DVD to watch it on. And then luckily you had the Blu-ray, which you heckled me about.
Which was not cheap, by the way.
No, it was $20. I was like, I was texting you. I was like, I'm going to have to go to Walmart and buy it for $28.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, I'll watch it tonight. You watch it tomorrow. That worked out because I couldn't find this to rent for $4.
It's a good point.
$6.
So you think that's all studio driven?
I wonder. Like, if they took it off the market, does that mean they don't want people knowing the story? It has to be, right?
But then again, the 2018 version seems like it's a totally new story. That character, that doctor character that's in the new one, is nowhere to be found, even a hint of.
Well, maybe he's the doctor character that has with Udo the one exposition dump that we're going to get into later on.
He's
there in one scene, half
illness?
A scene.
Yeah, I mean, it's not
half a scene.
Certainly not. Maybe that's where the extra hour comes from. They flesh out his backstory. I don't know.
Two and a half hours versus 98 minutes.
So yeah. It's an interesting conspiracy theory there. I like the hint of it. But yeah, if you want to see something visually stunning, seek it out. Just be prepared to ask yourself WTF a couple times.
And maybe come back to it after you see Luca's Suspiria.
Yeah, the updated one, sure.
And watch this one, because this is a worthwhile study. Yeah. It really is.
Agree. And on that note, let's dance. Spoilers ahead!
This is a spoiler warning.
Spoilers. 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 Spoilers.
This is the spoiler section for the Dario Argento 1977 cult horror classic Suspiria, and we're doing it as a preface to the 2018 Luca Guadagnino updated version. If you have not seen the Dario Argento original, this is a good place to stop. Go watch it. Maybe take some drugs beforehand, really get yourself in the mood, and then come
make
back.
A night of it.
Yeah, come back, hit play here, and you can be all caught up. If you do not care about seeing it first, or if you have seen it, or if you're just interested in what the whole plot was, and we've done enough teasing for you in the first part, this is where you want to be. It's all twists and turns for the Suspiria 1977 original version from here on out from Mike, and Oscar, this movie event pod. Mike, let's start with some carryovers.
Yeah, favorite visuals, Mike. I know you have a bunch in here too, but a lot. Early on in the film, they really established the visual motif. That airport sequence is amazing to look at.
It's creepy. There's an overall sense of just eeriness and dread, and it's really on its face. It's just a regular airport. So.
Bright pinks and neon blues and lights that really flare off the rain-drenched windows, and then she gets outside into the rain, and that's a crazy-looking scene. The wind is sounding too bright, again, on the loud on the two. On the DVD version. On the Blu-ray, it's more balanced, but And then she's the cab drive to the dance studio.
I loved her eyes in that scene. I hit on it originally, but there's no reason to be so disconcerted and worried about what's going to happen, other than the fact that she sets the tone early just by looking around, and she can't tell what's going on. And then, of course, we see the woman running through the woods. And
you've never seen
with
a down
well,
right? But you've never seen a downpour before,
right?
Come on. Why are you just okay. Go back in and let your prissy, demanding ass wait 10 minutes before the downpour? Subsides.
So you've really come around on the Jessica Harper character.
I don't like her character. I don't like her performance. I can't help it, Michael. Because then she gets out there and she has a gall to try to pick up
a
taxi.
So we're doing worse scenes.
I'm doing
worse
scenes. We got into it. Because it looks gorgeous.
Yes, it does.
But she puts her bags down, or little bags. It's like two purses.
I had a problem with this as well. Yes.
And she's flat jumping in front of, she should get run over. She deserves to get run over. Jumping in front of taxis going full speed.
Yes.
And then luckily moving back.
Not a great hailer of cabs, yeah.
Not good.
She's also foreign. It's her first time in a new country.
All right, fine. She's a rich, spoiled girl.
Yes.
Demanding that these cabs stop for her. I get it. It plays for her character. But I shouldn't like her character after this, because she kind of assassinates herself after she hails a cab.
Mm-hmm.
She expects that cabbie to get out.
In the pouring rain. Yes.
And pick up those two little bags.
Tiny suitcases.
That she easily goes back and gets quickly.
And not only that, she's walking through the airport to get to the outside with no trouble at all. No trouble whatsoever. Those bags are not cumbersome.
What the hell?
Yeah, I have an issue with that as well. I think
that's can't be like that. I mean, are you kidding?
Fair.
You can't be, yet you're being an a-hole if you're acting that way.
Fair criticism.
So that's our first scene meeting this girl. All right, this is a rich a-hole.
Yeah, and that's tacked on to a problem you already said you had when you see her reaction with the woman running through the woods, as well as the Patty character who's in the doorway at the very start. Yeah. So you were off to a bad, you had a bad first impression.
I had a bad first impression, but the neon lit up forest with blues and reds.
The backlighting throughout all these scenes is just stunning, and I'm sure there is a hidden meaning somewhere.
The establishing shot, Michael, of the Bright Red Dance Academy.
Yes.
A lot of influence on David Lynch movies.
Yes.
That bright red.
That deep red on the hallway as well, certainly. How the background in her own room, Jessica Harper's room, goes from green sometimes to red from a different angle, I thought was quite stunning.
I liked all the barrack-style sleeping quarters when they make after the maggots hit. And just the backdrop of all the pink, with
shadows
the sheets
behind them and the sheets. Yeah,
all the witches sleeping outside of all the girls.
Yes, yes, their own little seance circle.
But dude, when the blind man with the dog walking through the empty city, the ghost town of the city,
I had a problem with this too.
But I love the visual of it, of the the lights underneath the
gorgeous architecture,
gorgeous
lighting,
there.
But. We are taking this blind man who had just been recently fired from the academy. He knows secrets. He's the pianist for all these girls to dance around during their practice because it is a ballet academy. He knows secrets. He basically threatens Madame Blanc on the way out.
I think his sin is... I think the reason that they have to kill him off was because he was a jerk. Does he know anything?
Well,
I
his
don't
words
remember.
Leaving he... are... I'm blind, not deaf. So he knows something.
Oh, okay.
That's his words on his way out of the academy. So he does. I have one follow-up scene with him where he's out in public and he's in this packed beer hall. This absolutely packed, music playing, everyone's happy.
The witches put a trance on his dog to bite the kid, number one, right?
Right. So once he leaves,
the kid is the son of Satan, so he's not really hurt, right? The kid that the nephew, the demon kid, got bit by the dog.
Yes, now.
He's with his dog.
That's why he gets fired.
That's why he gets fired, because he's like, my dog wouldn't bite anybody. Right. He's probably right. The witches cast a spell to get the dog to bite the kid. Why? I don't know. They want to get rid of the
pianist.
Why
is a question you probably shouldn't ask throughout this movie, it was at least for where we review it. But yes, so the pianist Daniel, finally, he's in this packed beer hall. He goes out into the town square.
How about the slap dancing, by the way?
Keep
derailing.
I didn't understand.
It's pretty fun, though, right?
Not bad.
This got to hurt, though.
But we go from slap dancing.
I want to go on a 5-minute rant on slap dancing. You're not joining in here.
I don't think people want an hour and a half of the finer etiquettes of slap dancing is all. But we go from that to this empty, barren town square where it's just Daniel and his dog.
True.
Makes no sense to me if we're keeping up with. And then the dog again turns on Daniel, his own owner, bites him in the neck in the middle of his town square, yeah. Which would be a big deal if literally anybody had left the bar and was around on the outside.
Creepy. And cinematography wise, you got the aerial shots where they basically took the camera and they had like crazy zip line yeah. tracking shots. They talked about it wasn't that hard to do, but quite the effect. You had all the shadows working. It was like witches on broomsticks.
Yes.
Working around the
whole
scenario.
Like a stone gargoyle. It looked like it was moving around. It was pretty well done.
Why they have to make such a big show of it for a blind guy, I don't know. That's a little flaw.
I'm with you there. I didn't actually mind the grotesqueness of that because we see the dog actually tears this guy apart. And he's seen chewing from a low angle the rest of his remains.
A puppet dog. I mean, it was basically, what was that dog on Conan?
The Triumph.
It was Triumph, the insult comic dog.
Yes.
Eating his neck open.
It was 77, man. Yeah. It was a different time. So the big reveal of this and what Daniel does know and the big twist of all this is that this is a coven. This Dance Academy is a coven for witches.
Right.
Which have dedicated their life to this past witch who was persecuted by the town, essentially.
Yep.
And was a known witch, and this is basically the shrine to her
and their
and
cover,
her disciples.
Yeah, their cover is a world famous ballet school,
as it is. Yes.
So I'm just saying they should kind of keep their cover, shouldn't they?
You would think if they're going to eliminate people, it wouldn't be their own students repeatedly.
I don't understand why this witch, this madam witch, yes. whatever, this 200, if you think in centuries as a witch, why would you want to blow your cover so obviously and bring the cops over there? Like, I don't get it. I mean, you could have wrote that in. I mean, I hope Luca writes it in. But why would you blow your cover and just showcase these serial murderers of these girls? And it's not like they're covering it up. They're showcasing it. They're Hannibal Lectering.
And
these murders.
And we also know that it's
meat puppets.
It's based enough in reality that the cops are on the case.
They are on the case.
The authorities are there
immediately. Never followed up
upon. No, of course.
The cops are in one scene.
At some point, if you're going to have the same academy killing the girls over and over again, the cops are going to eventually look to the head of the whole place.
Yeah. Like, it makes it like more than one. Three girls in this movie? Was it three?
Yeah, I think it's three.
Yeah, it's three girls. So it's like a murder spree.
Yeah.
And the bodies are left out. The first two in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's enough. But then you also have disappearances. Maybe the other girl was in the building, so they could hide her for a little bit, but she's going to go missing.
Yeah, exactly. Her parents are, I mean, they do make a deal about how she only has one parent left, but nonetheless, she has a parent left.
Someone's going to, you know, send
at
word.
Some point, like at Christmas or something, somebody's going to, yeah. So
a
there's
potential murder spree.
Now, look, there could be big subtext that we're totally missing. But Mike and I have talked about this, and we, for the life of us, cannot figure out more than basically the facial issue of this being a euphemism for hell, essentially. And the red hallway leading into hell, and that's where all the hidden stuff is. And that's what happens. This Jessica Harper character, the main character, is surrounded by death everywhere, meets all the different dancers, eventually has a friend, Sarah, who's the other American girl,
right,
who they find out that the administration doesn't go home at night. They basically go somewhere within the walls of the studio, the dance academy, and they need to figure out where that leads. Sarah falls victim to this. She dies. Jessica Harper lets her die because Jessica Harper has been put a spell on, poisoned continuously.
I guess a reason that these girls are dying is that they're figuring out that it's a coven of witches, maybe? I mean, is that the reason, you think? That has to be it, right?
Even if it is,
they should cover it up.
Yeah,
they shouldn't hang
the professional
meat
who knows
there.
All the backstory says that they can only do it if it's in the glory of their head witch, which is the big woman that they're all praising and keeping the memory alive of. Again, the why is not answered very well. And maybe it is. If you have answers to these questions that are these gripes and we're just totally missing them, yeah, let us know because we can't for the life of us figure it out. that's not the highlight of this. The highlight of this is the stylistic shots and the beautiful scenery and the beautiful sights that this movie presents. And the witch twist at the end of it, where you actually do discover this is what's happening, is a nice twist for a horror movie.
The finale is awesome.
Yes.
It's really good. Again, it doesn't make the most sense in the world. Like, I'll have a few quibbles. But I do think, like, when she goes into the lair... And there's and the gauntlet's thrown down and a terrible exposition dump where Madam Whatever is like, kill her, she knows too much, basically. I never liked her from the start. I never liked her from the start. But that's a crazy ass scene where she's making her way through the bowels of this witch coven.
And it's handled very well where she comes upon her dead roommate, sees her, and then in the very next scene when she finds the head witch, the dead roommate who we just saw, basically stigmatized, comes to life.
Terrifying. Yeah.
Blood drooling out of her mouth, comes to attack her with a knife. It's
laughs.
Very scary. Oh, it's absolutely
it's the
terrifying.
The laugh of blood.
Yeah, it's horrifying.
That's
so there's a lot of good stuff in this.
One of the better horror movie
moments.
Screenshots, yeah. Moments
without
that we've
question.
Seen in a while. And it's an all-timer. Like when she comes out of that coffin, blood flowing
deep
out.
Deep laugh,
oh
yeah.
Oh my God, terrifying.
So the highs, there's a reason this is a cult classic. There are legitimate horror highs. Yeah. The look of it is amazing. That is very scary. It's a nice enough twist that hasn't been done to death even now in 2018.
Yeah.
So that's the story you're getting into. There are lows, other than just the whys, and we can keep talking about those if you'd like.
I got a couple more. I'll go fast because I don't want to. But the bat scene, you know, if you're a dancer, you could dance around that bat all day long. You can do backflips around the scene. If you're a ballet dancer at one of the world-renowned studios, and any ballet dancer, they're going to be able to do whatever they want and get away from that bat more than just barely lift their elbow higher. I mean, I guess maybe she's drugged, but even still, a drugged ballet dancer, I'm putting my money on her over a bat. I know she gets the bat
Did
later
you
on.
See the bat with the string attached to the bat in one shot? There's a very clear string attached to the fake bat. I thought that was, I mean, it's
and
the
same. Also, you can get the bat and then you can, in the sheet, and you can let the bat go. You don't have to kill the bat in that scene. You know,
I beg to differ. We had a bat in our house one time. We had to kill it. So I can relate.
All right, fine. I've had birds. I've shooed birds.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think
birds are not weapons of the devil,
it's
Michael.
Completely ridiculous. Flying spawn of hell? No. It's completely ridiculous that these ballet dancers were phenomenal athletes, shown to be phenomenal athletes
yes.
by all the non-actors of the group, right, that we see in the montage. Here, she is just stumbling around this whole place.
You have
and
a
she
big
could
problem
like,
with her quick
they
feet.
She's got terrible feet for a ballet dancer. It's absurd. It's because she's not one. But if you're going to write that into her character, that she is a world-famous ballet dancer, or at least a world-class ballet dancer at this world-class school, she's got to be able to maneuver. Or you got to make it so abundantly clear that she is drugged all day, every day. And
right.
then she must suck at her ballet dancing.
What was your impression, speaking of the drugging? And we said how Jessica Harper's character is drugged or poisoned or something.
Yeah, it's something going on there, but it's...
Was it just continuously in the wine or the food, you think? They were just doing it every night?
Yeah, throws the food out. Like, I don't get why you do that.
Yeah, what is the purpose? Unless they knew that Sarah was going to crack the code with Jessica Harper's character. I don't get it.
They knew that Sarah was the next girl that they was
it's going
figuring
to
them out.
Yeah.
Well, I just think the only possible reason for this coven to kill these people, but I don't know why they won't cover it up. Like, that still doesn't make sense. But the only possible reason is that the girls are discovering the coven.
What's going on? Yeah.
They out of necessity, they have to get rid of these girls.
And again, it was a different time. Maybe there weren't so many, such an emphasis on unanswered questions or obvious counters, as we like to hone on sometimes. And the plot holes weren't addressed necessarily through the screenwriting, and that was okay for that time.
Some scenes that I've flipped on, I had it as a worse scene. I really like that she kind of is passing out and fainting during the first ballet practice. I hated it my first watch.
I liked it.
Rewatching
I'm
it,
glad you came around
it
that.
Feels like that dream that I mentioned before. Oh my God, I'm naked. I'm late to class. I didn't do my paper.
Right?
Right? We all have those dreams. My teeth are falling out.
I hate that one.
Oh my God, they're crazy. I'm going off the road. Mike's much sexier than me.
Can't wait to sleep tonight.
All right, so that actually flipped on me. That was a worse scene, and now I like it. But here's a worse scene that's still a worse scene. Why doesn't Sarah look down at the room full of wires? You're not going to jump.
Before just jumping in.
Yeah, before jumping down. I mean, it's like the pool of blood in Halloween 4.
Yes. That was Halloween 2.
Halloween 2.
Yes.
Giant pool of blood encompassing the whole room.
And also, just to jump tack on to worse scenes here, the big how they're going to foil this witch's plot, or at least discover it for the first time, is that Jessica Harper's character says to Sarah, "We could hear their footsteps." So literally, their big foil is that they can hear the footsteps of the administration staying within the confines of this castle, essentially.
Right.
Instead of them leaving at 9:30 every night, which is what they think everyone does, the administration does. It's so thin. It's a little thin.
So your senses is what empowers the protagonist and the good guys of this movie. Her sense of sight to see the outline of the witch.
Oh God, I hated that.
Allows her to stab old witch.
That's how this ends, is that Jessica Harper's character confronts the big bad witch who disappears, sends the reanimated Sarah at Jessica Harper. And then Jessica Harper just stabs where the witch was anyway and kills her.
Like, there's no climb. There's no dilemma for this character.
Absolutely nothing.
Like, there's no, like, in Halloween, it's fight or flight. It's save the kids or whatever. There's a lot going on.
And here,
for Laurie Strode at the end of Halloween.
My zombie friend is coming to attack me. I might as well try stabbing this air anyway.
Yeah. Let me look over here by this air just in case the laughing I hear is associated with a witch that I cannot see.
Right. And that's right. Literally what happens.
That's a good call. You're lucky. You made the right call.
Getting to the end, and the end in and of itself, big issues for us. Defensive coordinator, also Mike over here, says the footwork for Jessica Harper needs to be mastered.
Work on her feet.
But overall, look, again, it's a watch because you're not watching this to be blown away by a Best Picture candidate. You're watching this for the uniqueness and the ingenuity that it took to make this horror movie.
If the sound of the Blu-ray was like the sound of the DVD, I would have watched it in mute and just watched it for the visuals as another reason.
Exactly. Great point. So. And you're seeing this for the visuals. And so there is a lot here to digest for a horror fan or a horror buff. And it's perfect for Halloween season. Look, if you're looking for kind of an underrated gem and you've been through all the classics and all the old favorites already, if you've done the Jasons, the Freddys, why not give Suspiria 77 a chance and catch yourself up getting ready for the Luca Guadagnino update?
And that's the thing. We're excited about Luca tackling this story because there's a lot of cool elements here.
Tons.
Ballet school, coven of witches.
And the witch thing, even today in 2018, like zombies are probably done to death.
Right.
Slashers are, they're having their moment, a renaissance, but they've been done to death. The witch thing is still kind of fertile ground.
The haunting of it. And then obviously you got the dreams nature of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that could work really well. I just think Luca's going to take the story of the psychologist friend, or the friend who knows the psychologist. I don't know. There's a psychologist, and then there's like a psychologist laureate. There's like a really older psychologist.
Yeah, who are the two guys that know everything about the witch.
Exposition dumps. Are you going to dramatize that?
Right.
If you're Luca Guadagnino.
Work it into the story at all.
Yeah. Of course you are.
As opposed to just being the old guy used for one scene to say, "Oh, do you know there's a head witch that started that place?
By the way, it's funny you should come to me.
Right now, when I'm right here.
And by the way, there's my friend who's the authority on this subject, happens to be. Let's shoot him at a low angle and just see nothing but sky behind him. Gorgeous shot.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah, totally.
Udo Claire. He's a great-looking guy and a great-looking sequence at this prestigious Munich building. I don't know what building that was. It looked great.
And then it all ends in flames, literally. So it ends on a hot note.
Hot.
Hot-ta-ta.
I want to see the new version.
Absolutely. And that's you summed it up nicely. This is a great preface for seeing where horror is now in 2018, contrasting it to where the beginnings of it were. Started a genre. It is equally as important in the lore as probably Halloween was, which we just spent 8 episodes covering anyway. So I'm glad we got to this. And the highs are very high. And look, the lows, they're not offensive, you can laugh at them.
You can laugh at them. If you don't watch the DVD, again, I say, watch the Blu-ray.
Yes, I would second that emotion. Guys, you can reach out to us again. If we're missing something, we want to hear it from you. We want to know if we have overseen or overshot our bounds here, and we're missing something glaring that's important.
We reviewed this to get ready for Luca Guadagnino's
yes.
movie, more so than we reviewed this to gush over it as a movie that we've always loved. We'll do some retrospectives like that in the future, and we'll do some retrospectives where we just want to see a movie again, and we have a movie to preview, so let's do it.
Yeah, that's, absolutely.
It matches up.
So trying to tie it into more current event stuff, keep you guys up to date, and get you ready for what's coming next, and we want to hear about your thoughts on that and any other programming that we have. We have the OSPs out there for First Man, A Star Is Born. We just did Three Identical Strangers. We're going to be doing Free Solo soon, and we got some more horror stuff coming up. So any of your thoughts, you can reach out to us. Mike and Oscar on Facebook, Mike and Oscar on Instagram, MM and Oscar on the Twitter machine, MikeMikeAndOscar.com, MikeMikeAndOscar@gmail.com, and MikeMikeAndOscar on Reddit. You could reach us at all those places. We are on Google Play, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, anywhere that you hear podcasts. And if we're not, let us know that too, and we will put ourselves there. Michael, on this fantastically visually pleasing and effective day, what are our final words of wisdom?
I have to do it again, but thank you again, because this is our best month ever.
It really is, yeah. Without
best month
thank
of
you for
ever.
Listening. Thank you for telling your friends, and hopefully we give you a reason to keep coming back.
It's somewhat of a cop-out, because I didn't think of any words of wisdom.
I'm going to have you fly through a plate glass window.
I have no more wisdom. You just get a big hairy hand.
A giant arm that is never explained or referenced
again. I thought it was the Igor guy. I didn't know it was a witch. That was cool. I thought it was a giant Igor Italian guy.
I just learned it
that was my arm.
I learned it was a witch now. In you saying that sentence, so okay.
It was the old witch, right?
Sure.
Or was it Igor?
I don't know. It was never referenced again. All right, guys. Reality sucks. Keep watching movies with us. We'll see you next time.
See ya.